You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 1st of August, the Bank of England rate decision expected 1 p.m., a 0.25% cut, taking it to 5%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Skulk Low, PSG Old Oak, the Woolies update. I don't know, I think they missed again, and certainly if you compare it to ShopRite. And as vessels from Binance, we're now getting Ethereum ETFs in the U.S. And then you're going to be chatting with Robert from Brooklyn. He's talking around the idea that large telcos are kind of focusing on metros and financial services, and then leaves a gap in the market for perhaps smaller players across the continent. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Big Discovery Vitality changes. Checkers in, Pick and Pay out. A number of healthy food adjustments kick in. Bloomberg Fed on course for September rate cut as risks to job market grow. In the press conference, Powell pretty much said that September the discussion would be cuts. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 1.6%, NASDAQ up 3%. Over in the east, we are mixed. Sydney's up 0.2%, Tokyo down 2.6%, Hong Kong is down 0.4%, and Tencent 0.75% higher. Commodities, green. Gold, 2,488. Brent, 81.22. Platinum, 984. Palladium, 917. Rand is 18.23. Bitcoin, 66,000. And top 40 opening call, green open, 90 points, 0.1% to the upside.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading now with Skulk Low from PSG Old Oak. Skulk, appreciate the early morning. I mentioned there in the intro, the Woolies update. Comparable store basis, sales up 6.9, but inflation 7.9. Fashion going backwards. HEPS at least, adjusted HEPS to be at least 10% lower. I thought a weak update, particularly compared to what we'd seen from ShopRite the day before. Initially, the market sold it off, but I think in the enthusiasm, even Woolies got a bit of an uplift yesterday.
Good morning, Simon, and good morning to all the listeners. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of more of the same. It's one of these companies that I just can't get the sweet spot. I mean, I think they did the right thing over the past year to get rid of David Jones. Mm-hmm. I think the Australian businesses really, you know, they struggled with that. And it cost the company, not just over the past, what they call 52 weeks or 53 weeks, but for many, many years now. And yeah, you mentioned a few of the stats. When you look at the whole portfolio, Woolies Food still definitely the star in the portfolio. I mean, they struggled. Let's make no mistake. I mean, when you look at the turnover, that grew. I mean, I think the data that stood out for me was definitely the online sales, but we'll get to that one. Mm. When you look at the comparable sales growth, 6.9%, I'd look all right. But I mean, you need to look at the price inflation. Price inflation, they mentioned 7.9%. So clearly, when you look at the volumes, that was negative. But they managed to expand. One of the things they included in the portfolio was Absolute Pets. People love their pets. You could see that the sales growth for the second half, that contributed 9.6%. So in short, volumes, you know, are under pressure. We can understand that we're the end of the hiking rate cycle. So clearly that do, you know, sort of detract some of the performances. Fashion, beauty, home, decline of 0.4%. Let's not get there. Country Roads, Australia, man, still 6.8% for the year and 8% decline for the 52-week comparable period. So, I would say in general that was not the best of trading updates. And you mentioned it in the intro, you know, share price actually improved quite a bit, over 2%. Big question mark around that. Why the move and upwards if the trading statement went looking as rosy? Because one of the things that also stood out, they actually specifically mentioned that the HEPS are going to decrease between, let's call it 14 and 19%. Mm-hmm. Even if you use the upper band of their forecast, call it 3.76 HEPS per share. I mean, the current consensus forecast still stand at 4.05. So this is going to be a pretty solid miss. As mentioned, yet the share price improved 2%, or over 2%. Now, where do you look? Why did the share price improve? Well, I think Mr. Market is telling us, wait, this could just be one of those recovery shares for the second half of the year, or let's call it going forward 12 months. Because remember, as we sit here, the clothing retailers, Truers, up 22% for the year. The Fushini Group, 21% up for the year. Mr. Price, up 58% for the year. You mentioned ShopRite for the food retailers, 11%, 6% for Spahn. Even Pick n Pay is struggling, up 18% for the year. And even after yesterday's 2% improvement, Woolies is still down 17% for the year. So, well, let's see if Mr. Market's going to be right going forward.
I take your point. And all those numbers, because, of course, I buried the lead. The big story yesterday, all-time high closing on the top 40 in the All Share. I mean, long may that last. There is nothing we don't like about that.
That's a fact, Simon. I mean, I've been sitting in so many meetings over the past few weeks, and so many referrals are made to South Africa and how bad our South African market has been doing over the past 5 years. And we tend to not celebrate these short-term victories. I just had a little graph, which I usually refer back to. When you take the top 40, in your case, and there's many ETFs on those, so you can actually go and just pull and look at this data comparatively. But when you look at the top 40, something like a Satrix 40, and compare that with the MSCI All Country World, but you exclude the US. Mm-hmm. Remember, this is a very important thing, because US, we know, has been on a serious bull run. If you exclude the US out of the MSCI All Country World Index, the South African top 40 has done exactly the same as this MSCI, excluding here the US. So, and even, I mean, I love doing these weekly analysis where I compare the MSCI South Africa ETF to all the other country ETFs on a weekly basis on a year to date. Now, as we sit here, South Africa has gone from the third worst performing country in February, now to in the top 15. So watch the space. Yep. Watch the space.
And I just put at the top 40 of the last 5 years, which includes a pandemic, we're up 50% excluding dividends. That's not shabby at all. Skoklo, PSG, Old Oak, appreciate the early morning time. And our poll today is around those highs. I mean, can we continue higher? Are we going to drift back down? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
If seagulls were hardy-dars who could afford to retire to the coast, what kind of bird would you be? Would you soar over the savannah or chase summer around the globe? You see, even when you stop working, your money won't. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Hannes Vessels, General Manager of South Africa for Binance. Hannes, appreciate the time today. We had the Bitcoin ETFs at the beginning of the year. Last week, we got the Ethereum ETFs being approved. Have they listed and how many came to market? Because with Bitcoin, we got, I think 10 or 11 of them at the time.
Simon, I think it's slightly less because I think a bit less demand than the Bitcoin one. But I think of the ones that listed, one that always stands out between the two would be the Grayscale Trust. That's obviously had a bit of an impact on both of them. So I think that's the one initially everybody will keep their eye on. And then obviously as that pivots into the larger players like BlackRock and Fidelity, that's when the market has found an equilibrium.
And what we've seen, I mean, it was the same. Bitcoin's been around, 14-odd years, Ethereum newer. But this kind of takes it up a level. I mean, there are a lot of asset managers, a lot of folks out there who don't want to go to a platform like Binance. Now they can literally do it in their traditional brokerage account. It brings legitimacy and ease of access.
It certainly does. I think the way I look at it, it's a traditional access mechanism to a new asset. Mm-hmm. And what's good for the Ethereum ETF or ETFs is that the Bitcoin ETFs have shown the way. I think people see that it can work, and it gives a bit more trust to the platform. And now I think we're going to see a lot more liquidity come in over time.
That's the point, because, I mean, the numbers in a note that you put out, and this is to, what, sort of mid-July, those Bitcoin ETFs are holding just over 16 billion. I mean, that is big.
That's a big number, and that number needs to be again be read against the outflows that we've seen from the Grayscale Trust initially. I mean, mm-hmm. I look at this in three phases, Simon, where initially you've got the buy the rumor, sell the news phase.
Yeah.
Then on day one, I think in both cases, we then saw Grayscale opening up. A lot of coins and tokens were locked in both of these instruments, and then exiting the market because they were locked in for so long, the holders undoubtedly had a profit. And then they took those profits, and then it continues to, can I say, almost bleed out. And then it finds an equilibrium where a lot of that goes to the larger players like BlackRock and Fidelity. And then you see that climb to the number of the 16 billion you just mentioned. And that's, for me, is when you find that equilibrium.
I get your point on it. There's also an important point. I mean, distinction between Bitcoin, which is the grandfather of it all, and which is very much a proof of work. Ethereum's proof of stake, which I also can't help thinking is, I don't want to say the future of crypto, but an important component of some of the coins.
It is. It is. And it's Bitcoin obviously unique in its operating mechanism. Some of its forks, as we call them, Bitcoin Cash, etc., also use a proof of work. But the remainder all use proof of stake. So an important mechanism, but also worthwhile remembering that Bitcoin's got a limited supply. Mm-hmm. Ethereum doesn't. There was actually a number of Ethereums minted before the ETFs opened. So again, I think worthwhile for investors to keep that in mind.
That's actually a great point. I always forget that Ethereum doesn't have a cap. The Bitcoin cap, 21 billion. And I think, I mean, we're probably still a few decades away from that last coin finally dropping.
Yes, it's obviously a reverse parabolic curve. It flattens out over time. But I think more importantly, I heard a number the other day from a reliable source that they will, well, at the moment, there's only actually 15 million Bitcoins in circulation because of Bitcoins people lost, locked out of the accounts, forgot their seed phrases, etc. So that number effectively is actually a lot less than we think it is.
I know someone in the US, he's got 8 Bitcoin in a wallet and he can't hack the password, and it's causing him stress because, of course, that's his retirement. Well, what we are seeing, you quoted a recent survey by EY where there's, I mean, if we'd had this conversation a decade ago, I think most people would say, what's Bitcoin? What's crypto? The whole alternative asset class, and in particular, the crypto coins, are, they're gaining interest, and particularly in the sort of more traditional financial services as well.
Correct. And I think the measure there, and there always needs to be some form of measure, is Metcalfe's law of networking. I think mm-hmm. a decade ago, that network was very small. But as you know, every node you add to the network, the number of network paths increase, and that does so exponentially up to a point. And we are not on the steepest part of the curve yet. So I think we've still got a long way to go.
Are we likely? I mean, bringing in of Bitcoin ETFs was definitely a biggie. It was the first time we had a proper ETF over a crypto coin. Now Ethereum, which I think most folks will say is sort of number two in the pecking order. Does this mean we're going to see some more coins coming? And I'm not talking the altcoins, the big ones, but perhaps we're going to start seeing more of those coming to market as well in the ETF space.
I suspect so, Simon. I think the next one we're going to see will be a Solana coin. I think that firm at large, but also I think look at all the decentralized applications they've got under the Solana umbrella. It's really astounding. So I think that's the next one you can expect. And I think the more we get of these, the better, because it gives the investors diversity. And that's ultimately what you're after.
Yeah, diversity and trace. And a great point you make there with Solana, where Bitcoin, we can do stuff with the blockchain, but the newer coins coming through Ethereum and then Solana, those blockchains are so much more than just the coins.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that was one of the things that, other than Bitcoin's limited supply, also interests folks like, you know, Larry Fink at BlackRock. Mm. These guys need what the investment community will call alpha. And there's just not a lot of alpha left if you go outside of tech. So then you need to start looking at these alternative asset classes. And I think if you look at someone like Larry Fink, he's highly convinced this is the way to go. So that obviously makes for exciting times.
Yeah, the hunt for alpha. And as you point out, it has been this year. If you went in tech, you were missing the alpha. We'll leave it there. Hannes Wessels, General Manager of South Africa for Binance. Appreciate the time.
When you stay invested over time in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money's in for some smooth sailing. With our global partners, JP Morgan Asset Management at the helm, your money can withstand the pressure and bad weather day-to-day market conditions cause. All aboard? Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Robert from Brooklyn. He's CEO at Intimate Solutions. Robert, appreciate the time today. A recent note you put out in making an observation that we're seeing a kind of a shift in telcos space in Africa broadly, where the big telcos are kind of consolidating around big markets. They're consolidating around mobile payments and the like, and they're perhaps leaving space for some of the smaller ones.
Yes, Simon, thanks for having me on your show. It is quite an interesting time at the moment. As you mentioned, the big players like MTN, they've sold off a couple of their smaller operations. Guinea-Conakry and Guinea-Bissau have gone to Telecel. Telecel have also picked up Vodafone Ghana. So they are looking at the bigger markets. And also there's a big push into mobile financial services, the likes of mobile money, mobile banking, insurance products and the like. And they're looking at providing these to a lot more of the, while unbanked, more technically savvy customers, a lot of them using the likes of your smartphones. And this is leaving opportunities for the smaller players to come in and service the lesser technically advanced customers who rely still on your feature phones, your old Nokia-type phones.
Yeah, you made a point in the note you put out. I mean, almost half the phones across the continent are those feature phones, the chocolate bars, rather than the fancy Apple or Samsung. And whilst a lot of folks will say those can't do much, actually they can do a lot.
Oh, without a doubt. You can still make a call and send SMSs, so there's revenue to be made out of those. Obviously, your old USSD menus where pick one, pick two, those are still relevant, and there are companies that do offer loans through USSD type menus. But essentially, you are looking to reach more and more customers. And this is where a little bit of a challenge is coming. I think the big players believe that the business case is limited to rolling out coverage in certain more rural areas. And that's where the smaller players need to decide, is it a space they want to play? And yeah, I think that's where the opportunities are.
That coverage is, I imagine, one of the big challenges. Now, you made the example earlier around MTN and Vodafone exiting some markets. There's probably some coverage there. But as we move more and further away from metros, it is coverage. And that is perhaps the biggest challenge they're going to face.
Yes, 100%. And I do believe, you know, there was the United Nations made a statement in, I think it was December, saying that, you know, access to communication and information is a basic human right. Mm. It is very all good and well saying, but providing the communication and the connectivity to people in rural areas comes at a cost. And this is where I believe governments and telcos need to play a joint effort. You know, your bigger players are focused on the more urban areas because the business case is obviously a lot stronger there. In the more rural areas, there is, like rolling out roads, water, electricity, there does become a responsibility on governments. Now, you might say a lot of these governments haven't rolled out roads and water and electricity in their countries, so now why are they going to roll out connectivity? And yes, that is true, but a lot of these countries are growing and developing very quickly, and there is an incentive for governments to be rolling out connectivity across the more rural areas and boosting mobile financial services, mobile health, mobile education. As I said, okay, a lot of people are still on the feature phones, but smartphones or basic smartphones are becoming cheaper and cheaper and more accessible. So basic, being able to get certain information and link to certain websites and get content you can read on a cheaper smartphone will help these people in terms of development.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like that idea where a cell phone tower becomes a basic infrastructure. And perhaps it's also easier and cheaper than building a road or a hospital. The challenge they're going to have is, I imagine, is around brands. I mean, MTN is one of the best known brands across the entire continent. But I suppose to some degree, if you're living in a more rural part of the continent, maybe it's not about brand. Maybe it's just around availability.
100%. You might only have one option, and you'll obviously have to use that. Ideally, the telcos that target these more remote regions, ideally they do get some sort of government subsidies. Mm-hmm. I have also seen this, and might be a reason why some of the bigger telcos are pulling out of some countries. Foreign large telcos might be seen as extracting value from a country where subsidizing a local company to provide the services at a discounted rate to the local community might be seen as beneficial. There have been cases, I know a couple of West African countries, where the larger international telcos are coming under pressure because of subsidized rates to the smaller players mm-hmm. that might or might not be partially or fully owned by government. So there are a few dynamics at play here.
Are the big telcos, I mean, you mentioned MTN's exited some markets, Vodafone's exited some markets. Certainly the big players seem to be focusing a lot more on the mobile money, insurance, and that sort of business. Does this at some point start to threaten their business, or do they, I mean, are they sort of correct in saying, look, it's a small market and we can almost leave it to somebody else and coexist peacefully?
I think it probably is the case that they can leave it to somebody else. You know, there was obviously a big land grab in the telco space across Africa 20-odd years ago. It doesn't become financially feasible for some of these telcos as well. You've got, and again, my experience with MTN primarily, you know, they've got very expensive infrastructure and systems that they're running, which are feasible in the likes of Nigeria, Ghana, South Africa, but might not be feasible in Eswatini. Now, you're running two tech stacks across your organization, one to cater for the big players and one to cater for the smaller players. Is that a balancing act that you want to play, or do you want one ecosystem for all? And I suppose these are questions they're having to ask.
That's actually, I hadn't even thought of that. Yeah, I mean, Eswatini, I remember going to Lesotho, and of course, it's a different telco provider. It's not, but they operate different. It's definitely a different tech stack. We'll leave it there. It's Robert from Brenklin. He's CEO, Intimate Solutions. Really appreciate the time today.
That's it for today. I was chatting with Kim Olefi yesterday around the ShopRite update, which certainly took the stock above 300 Rand for the first time. We asked if you were holding South Africa's top food retailer. Almost half of you said yes, great investment. A third said no, too expensive. The rest said you preferred others. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nubuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Strategies for equity investing.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.